Stupidity has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupidity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gatz, a man I consider a personal hero, an icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gatz providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gatz's influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupidity.
All right, welcome to episode 3 of Stupidity, the number one podcast, sports and recreation on Apple Podcasts. Number one overall for a week. It's, you know, consistently, I would say, in the top 30 this episode, because we got a ton of surprises for you. Stu Gatz Army, I'm telling you, this is what I want for Valentine's Day, okay? I do a lot for you, and I need you to do this for me. I want, and do it for my wife. I want this thing number one overall, not just in sports and recreation. We appreciate that. I want this number one, period, ahead of Oprah, ahead of Dr. Phil, ahead of Joe Rogan, ahead of everyone on Apple Podcasts this week. Overall, every category. Got it? Good. Valentine's week. It's an exciting week. Valentine's Day. I mean, we are doing this on Valentine's Day. Quick game of athletes that connote Valentine's.
Sure. Kevin Love.
Michael Sweetney.
Oh, wow. Former Nick, former Georgetown Hoya, Big East player of the year.
Stanzik, you know way too much about Michael Sweetney. Who the hell knows that much about Michael Sweetney?
Who doesn't?
Trey Flowers.
1-800-Flowers.com. Code Dan.
Josh Hart.
Ah, Josh Hart, current Laker, soon to be former Laker, plus the only current Laker with any heart.
Lovie Smith.
Ah, the former Bears coach. Stanzik, I give you $10 right now if you can tell me where Lovie Smith is.
Actually, no, he's the head coach of Illinois.
Oh, I owe you $10.
I'll never see that $10.
The Fighting Illini.
What about Bob Huggins?
Ah, Huggy Bear.
Tracksuits.
Of course, Bobby Valentine.
Ah, the former Mets manager who once was kicked out of a game and came back into the dugout more disguised. Abby, that reminds me. Do you remember the lacrosse tournament up in Wellington that I got kicked out of?
I try to forget, but yes, I remember.
All right, so we lost a heartbreaking game. The game was over. I was going my way. The referee, she was going her way. And then she called me over, and she reignited a fight that was happening during the game. All right? And she was talking down to me, and she had this Napoleon complex. Abby, remember this? You remember this referee? I mean, just insane. I'm not going to allow you to comment because I know you're going to go against me on this one, even though it's Valentine's Day and you should be on my side. But anyway, she called me back. Now, the game's over. I go my way. She goes her way. You're not supposed to talk to anyone after the game. She's certainly not supposed to instigate with me, but she did. She called me over, and she had some words with me, to which I said, hey, listen, do me a favor. You were going your way. I was going my way. The game was over. Knock it off with your Napoleon complex. And she kicked me out of the entire tournament. Out of the entire tournament. Abby, do you remember what I did during that tournament?
Didn't you just go to the car and watch the game from there?
You think that I just went to the car and watched the game from there, because that's what I told everyone I was going to do. But what I did is I stole a page out of Bobby Valentine's book. I was kicked out of the tournament, kicked out off the entire complex, kicked off out. I couldn't come back. And so what I did is I went to the car and I got my own fluffy mustache. I had a disguise. I sat on the parent sideline, and unbeknownst to the referee who had kicked me out, I was wearing a disguise and coaching our kids from the sideline. How about that?
Daryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder.
Abby, let me tell you something. You are sexy when you are dropping nicknames. Sexy.
Stupidity.
All right, so it's Valentine's Day. We got a lot of surprises here. A big surprise for my wife. She has no idea what's about to happen here. We'll get to that in just a second. Plus, I want to tell the story of the day me and Abby first met, because I think our audience, I know they haven't heard it yet, and I think they'll enjoy that story. Stantic, Valentine's Day. Are you married? What are you doing for Valentine's Day?
Not married, live-in girlfriend, though.
All right, Abby, help me out. Like, how long have you been living with her?
Moved in September.
She moved in, and how long were you dating before she moved in? I'm interrogating you right now.
Abby, it's
this
fine.
This is fascinating to me. How long did she? Were you guys dating before she moved in September?
We were dating for 15 months before we moved in together into a new apartment.
Abby, anything weird about this, or like, what do you think?
No, nothing weird about it. I think we did the same thing. I think that you should live together before you actually get married, because if you can't live together, then what's the point? You know, I mean, you can figure it out before you buy the ring that hopefully you'll buy soon.
What happened there?
All right, why is he buying a ring? I don't think he wants to buy a ring. I think he's trying to avoid buying a ring. Stanzik, I think you're trying to avoid buying a ring.
No one said anything about a ring except for Abby. I don't know where that came from. You're just throwing rings around.
Of course she is. I mean, Abby, what are you doing to Stanzik?
I'm making the point of why you should live together before you would consider buying a ring. You might want to live together because maybe you wouldn't even consider it.
Here's the deal. I'm telling you, I don't know if you had this moment yet, but this is why you need to live with each other. You need to gauge her reaction. Are you living in a big place or an apartment? Because Abby and I lived in an apartment.
Apartment.
Okay. So this is the reason I told her she had to live with me. You have to gauge her reaction. Once she's comfortable enough, you're comfortable enough. Like, you have no idea until she moves in with you what her reaction's going to be after you take a huge dump and stink up the entire apartment. Abby, this is what we think about. I'm serious. I'm telling you right now. We think, like, for you, you're probably saying, I need to get to know him. I need to see if I can live with him. The only reason I moved in with you, you moved in with me in that tiny little apartment, is because I needed to gauge your reaction after I took a shit.
I've never gotten used to your poop smells. You're disgusting.
Happy Valentine's Day. Stupidity! Okay, all right, so Valentine's Day, I thought it would be a fun idea, Abby, to share the story of the first day we met, which, you know, we didn't really meet that day, but I feel like it's the first day we met. Do you remember that day?
I don't remember the actual day, but I remember you telling me about the day after.
We were in Temple, and Lord knows I'm a terrible Jew. I never go to Temple, but on this day I decided to go to Temple despite the odds that were against me, stacked against me, and I'll tell you about those odds in a second. Do you remember what Jewish holiday it was, Ab?
Probably Yom Kippur.
So, Stantic, I am, the night before, the holiest day on the Jewish calendar, I decide to go out. Now, listen, I knew I had to go to Temple the next day because, Stantic, I'm new to the area, so I'm not even moved in yet. And Danny Katz, who's my best friend, he tells me the night before, hey, Yom Kippur tomorrow, I have a ticket for you. I'm going to pick you up 7:30 in the morning. We're headed over to Temple for 3.5 hour service. I mean, that's what he tells me. That's dreadful. You don't want to hear that at 20-something when you know you got a big night ahead. So I'm out, and I'm partying, and I'm having a good time. And perhaps I should have stayed home and not partied at all, but I was 20-something, and I was single, and I'm down in South Florida, and I am partying my ass off. And so I'm thinking to myself, all right, I'll go out to, like, midnight. And so I'm just watching the clock, and I have angst, and I got, you know, there's all sorts of tension going on, and I'm just thinking, when am I going to go to sleep? And midnight becomes 1, 1 becomes 2, 2 becomes 3, 3 becomes 4, 4 becomes 5. He's picked me up in 2.5 hours. I remember the last sip of alcohol I took was at 4:45 in the morning. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I am going to wake up at like 7 and I'm going to call Danny and I'm going to tell him, hey, I ain't coming today. There's no way. Take your ticket. Scalp it outside the Temple. I am not coming today. I did not call him. I did not wake up at 7. He came to my apartment and he called me. I didn't answer. He called me. I didn't answer. He called me. I didn't answer. Most people would leave. Not Danny Katz. Danny Katz pounded on the door to the point where I had, and I knew it was him. And Stanzik, I was thinking about not answering the door, but I got up. I got out of bed. I answered the door and it's him. And Danny says to me, oh my God, you look like hell. I feel like hell. I know I smell. Danny looks at me like he had seen a ghost. He had never seen me looking quite like this in my entire life. He says, hey, we got to go to Temple. So I'm thinking to myself, my God, I'm hungover. I don't want to do this. And I'm saying, Danny, I'm not going. I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up in the car. I'm going to throw up at Temple. And he's like, you're going to be fine. Let's go. Suck it up. I get in the shower. I get ready. I throw a suit and tie on. Long story short, we drive over to the Temple. I did throw up once. He had to pull over on Knob Hill Road, and I threw up on the side of the road. And then we got to Temple, and I handed him my ticket. And I get there, and we're late because Danny's usually first row. We were sitting in the last row. And Abby, by the way, you were sitting a couple of rows ahead of us. Why'd you get there so late? What was your excuse? I was hungover. What was your excuse?
No parking.
You know Yom Kippur, it's a packed house. It's like going to see Yankees-Red Sox Game 7, you know?
Right.
I see this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman. Get up, all right? And she is there with her dopey boyfriend, and there's no way she's going to stay with that boyfriend for long term. And so she turns around for a second, and she waves. What do? Naturally, I wave back to her. I'm thinking, wow, look at that hottie a couple of rows up. She's waving at me. She doesn't even know who I am. This is exciting. I'm, thank God, Danny, he dragged me out of bed to come to temple because I am going on a date tonight, even though it's Yom Kippur and you're not supposed to go on any sort of date. You're not supposed to do anything. But anyway, she waves to me. I wave back to her. Our eyes lock and we smile at each other.
No, that is definitely not what happened. You are a moron. I was not waving at you. I was not looking at you. I was waving to Danny, who I've known since I was 14. Our eyes definitely did not lock. I was probably looking at Danny, but no, so that's not what happened. And I definitely did not wave at you.
So you're telling me, because this is news to me here on Valentine's Day, thank you, honey, you're breaking my heart, but you're telling me right now there was no flirting going on?
No, I don't even remember that you were with him.
I mean, how about that for a Valentine's gift? I am telling the audience right now, for 17 bleeping years, I have operated under the assumption that Abby was flirting with me that day in temple. 17 years I was operating under that assumption that Abby was flirting with me, and it was just revealed to me. She didn't even know I was there. Anyway, long story short, and we'll get to our actual real first date on the next episode because I think people will enjoy that as well. Long story short, she did break up with that bozo beefcake she was with 6 months later, and Danny Katz set me up with her, and here we are 17 years later. So you crushed me on our Valentine's Day here, honey, but I'm about to make yours. Not only am I going to give you the single best Valentine's Day gift I've ever given you, I maintain it's the best Valentine's Day gift in the history of Valentine's Day gifts besides 1-800-Flowers.com promo code Dan. Abby, you ready for your gift?
Ready.
Hey, Abby, Kenny G here, wishing you a happy Valentine's Day. Stu Goss loves you so much, and I'm here to prove it.
I'd be remiss to have Kenny G on anything that I'm doing, anything Lebatard show related, without asking him this important question. What's the single most important thing the Rams have to do to beat the Patriots?
All they need is for me to do this. If I play the anthem, they're going to win.
He's right. I mean, he's right. He didn't play the anthem and they lost, so he's right. I mean, how about that, Abby? Kenny G. I mean, he's Jewish, by the way, just so you know. But, I mean, Valentine's Day, serenade, saxophone. He's a busy man doing me a big favor. He's Jewish. Again, he's Jewish, Abby. There it is. You and Kenny. Just a couple of mentions cutting it up. How about that? Abby, I pulled a lot of strings to make that happen. I hope you enjoyed it. Do you enjoy your gift?
Yes. I loved it. Thank you.
Listen, thank Kenny G, and here's what I'm thinking, Abby. You tell me, because I think the audience knows that, you know, at this point in our relationship, 17 years in, Sunday night's a very important night. But since I did that for you and it is Valentine's, I'm thinking we push Sunday to Thursday night this week. What do you think?
Absolutely not. You know the arrangement.
And here's what that arrangement is. That's disappointing, considering I got her Kenny G. The arrangement, we have an ongoing thing Valentine's Day. Abby doesn't want me to get her anything. What she wants on Valentine's Day is to be left alone. And so the gift that I give her is the gift of no sex.
Stupidity!
All right, very excited to have Mark Teixeira on the number one podcast in America right now, at least sports and recreation. We were there for a couple of days. We were ahead of Oprah Winfrey. I mean, we were number one in the nation, number one on Apple Podcasts. Right now, we'll settle for being number one sports and rec, but I'm telling you right now, Stugatz Army, if I'm not number one overall again after this week, especially since I'm having Mark Teixeira on, there's going to be issues. Okay. I'm that's not a threat. I'm just telling you there's going to be issues. My wife says I have a tendency to think that everyone's my friend, and she says maybe you should actually check with them to see if they think that you guys are friends. I think that you and I are friends. We never met, but I think we're friends. How would you classify our relationship?
I would say we are friends. You know, when you talk to somebody, you go, oh, yeah, my good friend Stugatz. I wouldn't say we're good friends.
My best friend, Mark Teixeira, with me on Stupidity, the number one podcast in America. You were drafted in the ninth round by the Red Sox in 1998, but you didn't like how the Red Sox treated you. Can you share that with us? What happened there? What did the Red Sox do?
So I was a top 15 prospect going into the 1998 draft as a high schooler out of Maryland, and I knew I was going to get picked somewhere between like the maybe 10th and 20th pick, so kind of around there. The Red Sox, a few days before the draft, called me and said, hey, we want to take you with the 12th pick. And we want you to do a prearranged deal. Will you sign for this number? It was $1.5 million at the time. And, you know, that really wasn't legal at the time. And my agent said, hey, you know, just let them draft you and then we'll negotiate after they draft you. So I kind of told him, hey, you know what? Thank you. I'd love to play for the Red Sox, but we'll negotiate after the draft. They didn't like that answer. They let every team know that I was not going to sign and that I was going to go on to college, go to Georgia Tech. I did not get drafted until the ninth round. And guess who drafts me? The Boston Red Sox. And I just, you know what? And people ask me why I was such a tough negotiator during my career and why I was so business savvy at a young age. It's because at 18 years old, I learned the business of professional sports. And I got wise and told Boston to kind of go take a hike.
Is that why you chose the Yankees? The only time you had, the only time you were a free agent, you chose the Yankees. But did you choose the Yankees because of your disdain for the Red Sox?
Not at all, because the good thing was is that the regime that drafted me in 98, by the time, you know, 10 years later in 2008, was completely different. So when I met with Theo Epstein, I was super impressed. I mean, Theo is a sharp guy. He kind of revolutionized the way that GMs look at the game and look at their teams and their organization. So I would have been, you know, very happy to play with the Red Sox. It, you know, what happened to me in high school had nothing to do with that.
All right, so you don't carry a grudge. I carry him for life, Mark. I mean, that's, that's just me. So that's interesting because I've always said, give me the guy who's got an eye for talent. Give me the guy who could see value where others don't. Give me Theo Epstein over the great manager. What do you think about that?
Listen, I think managers can only screw things up. And the reason I say that is baseball, it's not like Bill Belichick game planning or scheming, you know, making adjustments mid-game. Baseball managers pretty much, once the game's started, they throw the ball out there, they say, go play. You know when your starting pitcher's done. You know what matchups, you know, every manager has this big binder and his coaching staff says, okay, well, if this player, you know, comes in, we're going to put in this pitcher or vice versa. So the game is kind of predestined, but a GM on the other hand, he constructs a roster in the off season. He hires scouting directors to go get him young players. And I think GMs have a much bigger imprint on the game today. That's why you see GMs making $5 million and managers making $1 million.
All right, I'm going to bring on Guillermo here. He's probably the biggest baseball fan we have on our show, probably him and Chris Cody. And we're just always coming up with wacky ways to kind of fix baseball here, Tex, to make it better because we care about the game. And we also do it to annoy Dan. Before Billy starts pitching ideas, I do want to tell you, in the NBA, final 5 minutes of a big game, I know I'm guaranteed to see LeBron James not only be in the game, but taking all the big shots or making all the big passes or making all the big blocks in that game. I'm guaranteed it, Mark. I know I'm going to see him big spot, big game, late in the game. I'm not guaranteed that in baseball. So I came up with an idea called the magic at bat, where once per nine innings, a manager. So let's say it's Bryce Harper. He's already batted in the eighth inning, Mark. Okay. I think the manager should be able to pull out a magic at bat and replace who's ever up, the eight hitter. He should be able to replace him with Bryce Harper. Just one time per nine innings, it's called the magic at bat. What do you think? I think fans would love that. What do you think?
My initial reaction, Stu, is it's a little crazy. I mean, I think that's called a pinch hitter.
Bryce Harper would be in the game.
Can I compromise with you here? Because sure. No one would ever go for the magic at bat. Okay. Let's go to 26-man rosters, and let's just have, like, some dude that can't play any defense, has no business with a glove on his hand, right, as that 26th man on the roster for your magic at-bat. Because I agree, there's nothing worse than the game on the line in the eighth or ninth inning and seeing a slap-hitting second baseman come up that's got no chance to drive in three runs.
If you think that idea was insane, wait till you hear Billy's. Billy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Stu.
How'd you feel about the Teixeira's answer to the magic at-bat, Bill?
Well, here's the thing, Stu. You didn't set it up right. So, Mark, this is what he left out. In the magic at-bat, he didn't tell you that there's smoke that comes out of the dugout, and the player, you don't know who it is, comes through the smoke and just reveals themselves. Did that change your opinion of the magic at-bat at all?
Actually, I like it better now.
Billy, I am a master salesman. I'm the master salesman on the show, and you absolutely sold that better and convinced Teixeira this is now a decent idea.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good now that you had to smoke.
Well, here's the thing, Mark. We have solutions for almost every problem you can come up with. So, like, for example, they were talking about having a pitch clock, right? So, I mean, you have to hold the pitcher to 20 seconds or whatever the pitch clock is, right? Now, there's no real consequences if the 20 seconds go by. I mean, maybe they give them a ball or whatever, but this is our idea for that. So what you do is, at the pitcher's mound, you have a batting practice, like, pitching machine, right? So if the pitcher wants to throw a curveball or a slider or whatever, they only have 20 seconds to get that off. And if they don't, then the pitching machine is just throwing a pitch down like 75 miles an hour right down the middle, and the batter's just going to tee off on that pitch. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're turning Major League Baseball kind of into the XFL version, right? And I think there is room for some really interesting things. I don't see a pitching machine being one of them. I'm going to have to be honest with you guys.
What do you think about trampoline warning tracks for the really tall walls?
I'm in on trampoline warning tracks. I mean, because, you know, I can't say no to everything because I see a pattern developing here. So I'm going to give you trampoline warning tracks because I think that would actually be pretty cool.
Billy, was that the idea that Leland liked or no?
Oh, that was the idea that Leland. You want to hear what Jim Leland had to say when we told him that idea, Mark?
Yeah.
How do we feel about this one, Jim? We lower the outfield walls with safer landing spots behind them, such as water or ball pits. That's Mike Ryan's idea. I think it's a good one. We're eliminating the outfield fences because kids love when outfielders, when anyone jumps into a ball tank.
Okay. You know, that would probably be a little bit more exciting if you're, what you're saying is so you shorten the fences so they would jump over the fence.
Yes,
and get the ball.
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, that's really not a bad idea.
Yeah! Yeah! Yes! Yeah! Yes! Yeah! Yes! Yes! Yeah! It's the most shocking piece of audio I've ever heard, Mark.
Jim Leland is a legend. I think Jim needs to have his own podcast. And he's smoking heaters the entire time.
Stantic, put that on the calendar. Let's get that done. I'm telling you, Teixeira should be producing this podcast. Billy, do you have more ideas for Mark Teixeira?
Oh, I have two more before Chris gives you ideas. So what do you think about this, Mark? You already talked about having like a designated 26th person that could come in for pinch hitting at the end of the game, right? How about this? Every team has a home run legend, and that person comes in for the end of the game. And this is the second idea. So an extra innings, home run derby, but you can only use your home run legend. And it has to be someone that's connected to the town or the team in some way.
I love that.
Yes.
Because this is the reason. There is nothing more entertaining than old-timers hitting batting practice and talking about how good they used to be. Because, so we would mic them up. Let's take it a step further. We'd mic them up.
Oh, this is great.
And then we could hear them talking smack back and forth to each other. At least 20% of these home run derbies and extra innings would end in a fight. Could you imagine, like, Reggie Jackson for the Yankees versus, like, Jim Rice for the Red Sox just crushing each other?
That'd be so great. I mean, Teixeira, you might be able to latch on with a team like the Braves or the Yankees or someone, and you could be their 26th guy.
We could, but you know, it'd be more fun if the guys were at least like in their 60s, right? That'd be even more fun. They got to have enough pop. Maybe we give them like metal bats so they can actually hit it out. But
rubber ball.
That would, man, I'm all in on that one.
All right, so Billy, put Fat Chris on and let Fat Chris pitch a couple of ideas here. Fat Chris, what do you got for Mark Teixeira?
Everyone likes a twist. You can agree, right? When you're reading a book, when you're watching a movie, you like a twist.
So, of course.
And everyone loves a home field advantage in sports. So what we're going to have is every baseball team at the start of every series, they can put a pond in the outfield anywhere they want. They have to leave it for the entire series. Like, you can't switch it from game to game. So you just have to commit to that's where the pond's going to be. But it's like you're talking like a 10-foot pond, 10 by 10, maybe like 3 feet deep with water in it. And they just have to deal with the elements. What do you think about that?
Can I just be honest with you?
Yeah, go
this
ahead,
is,
please.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Really?
Do you realize how much work putting a pond in every single series would be for the ground crew? These poor guys, I mean, they're overworked and underpaid as it is.
There you go. We're creating jobs.
It's ridiculous.
Get a whole new pond crew for every team.
I'm just being realistic here. To dig a pond. Imagine by the end of the season what our outfields would look like. Forget about what it looks like after a Pearl Jam concert at Wrigley. I mean, we're doing ponds into every single stadium. I just don't think we can do that.
All right, so you love movies here. What's the best movie you saw this year?
I haven't watched a ton of movies this year. I'm kind of on a TV show kick. But I did get to see Bohemian Rhapsody, and I loved it. I'm a big music guy, so I love Queen. I know it won the Golden Globes. People are saying, oh, it shouldn't have won, and other films got robbed. But I loved it, man. I didn't want it to end. I didn't want that last scene at Wembley Stadium to end. So I was into it.
All right, we're going to bring on Mina Kimes, and I'll explain this in a second. But you have now mentioned Pearl Jam. You have mentioned your love for music. You have mentioned Queen, the coolest music experience you've ever had. Have you met Eddie Vedder? Because, listen, I love two bands, Mark. I love the Grateful Dead, and I love Pearl Jam, and that's it. And I'm dying to meet Eddie Vedder. Now, I've met John Mayer. I've met Bob Weir. Have you met Eddie Vedder? Have you hung out with Eddie Vedder?
I have met Eddie Vedder. Hanging out would probably be an overstatement. We were in Wrigley, and spent like 10 minutes with him in the dugout, just chatting.
So it sounds like you were hanging out. Did you get his phone number, or what happened there?
No, I didn't get his phone number. I never ask people for their numbers, man. People ask me for their numbers unless, like, if it's used to, it's different, you know, because we're friends.
Yes,
but
of
if I just
That's
meet
friends.
You, and I'm not going to ask you for your number. We need to build a little bit more rapport than that.
Is there a celebrity that asked Mark to share for his number where you're thinking to yourself, how the hell did I arrive here where that person is asking me for my phone number?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Like, Eddie Vedder didn't ask for your phone number?
No, he didn't. I don't think any of those guys that, like, people ask, who is the biggest celebrity you've ever met? And everyone runs through Yankee Stadium, right? So there's a lot of actors and, you know, musicians, whatever. But I have to say, Prince Harry. I got to hang out with Prince Harry for like 4 hours in New York. We did a charity thing together. He was the coolest guy and, you know, probably the biggest celebrity if you look at like worldwide fame of everybody that I've hung out with. And I think I enjoyed hanging out with him. And I think now, you know, when I see him all over the supermarket tabloids and whatever, I'm like, yeah, I hung out with that guy. He's pretty cool.
You're talking about the ginger, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my God, it's got to be. I mean, yeah, I would think in your Rolodex of the people you've met in your life, the two most famous are him and Derek Jeter.
Yeah. Well, you know what? After we won the World Series, we went to a Knick game and then went to the 40-40 Club and hung out with Jay-Z and Chris Rock. Me and my wife are sitting there at the 40-40 Club like, what just happened? You know, last year I was playing for the Braves to start the season, you know, chilling in Atlanta, having a good time with my buddies from college. And now I'm sitting here with Chris Rock and Jay-Z at the 40-40 Club. My life has changed quite a bit in the last 14 months.
All right, so we're going to bring on Mina Kimes here because we discovered Mike Ryan and I love the movie Point Break, Mark.
Great flick.
And so we were discussing it for a couple of weeks when Mina was in town, and Mina was jumping into the conversation, and it appeared like she had seen the movie and loved the movie the way Mike and I loved that movie. And then she revealed to us weeks later that she had never seen Point Break, ever. But I'm telling you, if you were part of these conversations, would think that Point Break is, you know, the best movie she's ever seen. So we stumbled upon a fun idea where Mina breaks down movies. We have no idea whether or not she's seen them. She's seen some movies. She hasn't seen all these movies. Mina, say hi to Mark Teixeira.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mina. How are you doing?
Good, good. Love Point Break. Great flick. Still haven't seen it. Great flick.
You knock it off.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but Keanu Reeves probably should have won an Oscar for his performance.
Johnny Utah.
I always felt he should play me in the movie about my life. Look it up. We kind of look alike.
All right, so here's the deal. So what we've done now, Mark, with Mina is we'll give her some movies. She will, you know, give a description of the movie, her feelings about the movie, tell you kind of what happened in the movie. And then me, you, Stanzik, our producer, will guess whether or not she's actually seen the movie or not, okay?
It's a deal.
This is Mark Teixeira's top three movies of all time, okay? Number three, Star Wars. Go ahead.
Well, Star Wars, come on. I mean, it's like one of the most famous movies of all time. I assume we're talking about the original number one,
which is
obviously the tale of how Luke Skywalker, played by Mark Hamill, finds out that he's a Jedi, right? Because he's living with, like, Uncle Ben and some other lady on this planet. And then he gets this message from R2-D2, and it sets off this whole chain of events where he discovers that he's, you know, Leia's brother and all that stuff.
Stanzik, has Mina Kimes seen the movie Star Wars?
Zero chance.
I'm going to say that Mina Kimes has not seen the movie Star Wars. Mark?
I'm going to say that she has seen it, but she saw it once and has lost a lot of recollection of what actually happened.
All right, Mina, the answer is?
Yeah, Mark nailed it. It's been a while. The Uncle Ben thing, for some reason, that's what stands out in my mind, is Mark Hamill being really whiny and being like, Uncle Ben, I wanted to go to some planet. That's literally my only memory of Star Wars.
That was really good. I mean, I could tell that you knew enough about the movie, but, I mean, it wasn't Uncle Ben. You know, Ben Kenobi was actually the guy. It was
you made him a rice, Mina.
Yeah, it was a rice.
Yeah,
but,
he doesn't
find out that Leia's his sister until number two. But
how do you remember that?
It's his favorite movie of all time. He's actually seen it, Mina, more than one time.
It's a great movie. I like all the Star Wars.
All right, let's get to his second favorite movie of all time, which is also in my top five, by the way. It is Caddyshack. So Mina Kimes, go ahead on Caddyshack.
Okay, so I'm not like a huge fan of this movie, but I've seen it because it's my husband's favorite movie, and I've been forced to watch it. My husband grew up caddying on a golf course as well. So Caddyshack, Rodney Dangerfield, Chevy Chase. I don't remember the name of the actor who actually plays the caddy, the young dude who's the main character.
Noonan.
But basically, it's like a coming-of-age story. He's a caddy for this, like, rich jerk. Then he starts working or caddying for Chevy Chase. Rodney Dangerfield's this total snob, terrible, you know, ridiculous, nouveau riche guy. And it all culminates in this tournament. And what I remember of the tournament is the kid caddy puts it at the end. It only goes in because there's, like, an explosion from the gopher that Bill Murray's character has been hunting down.
A lot of details. Very good. Maybe perhaps too many details. Let's start with Stanzik again. Stanzik, go ahead. Has Mina Kimes ever seen Caddyshack?
She's trying to trick us with this. It's my husband's favorite movie. I'm going to say she's seen bits and pieces of the movie, but she has never seen the movie from start to finish.
Tex, I'm going to say here that if you don't remember Noonan's name, you have never seen Caddyshack. So I'm going to say no. Mina Kimes has never seen Caddyshack.
I think she has seen it. I think what she said is, I don't remember the actor's name that played Noonan.
Mina Kimes, have you seen Caddyshack?
Mark, you shouldn't have trusted me. I've never seen Caddyshack.
Oh, really?
It is my husband's favorite movie, though.
So how'd you know about all the, did you just like look up on Google, like all the different characters and stuff?
Yeah, I Wikipedia'd it about 13 minutes ago.
Mark, do you find it strange that she lies about movies she's seen just so she could be a part of the conversation?
You know what? I'm not surprised at anything that happens on this podcast.
Stupidity. All right, let's go, Mina. His favorite movie of all time, also in my top five. Not my favorite because Point Break is. Not my second favorite because that's Tango and Cash. But Mark Teixeira's favorite movie, number one on his list. Great movie. Mina, go ahead on Goodfellas.
Okay, so I have seen Goodfellas. I prefer Godfather Part Two, if we're talking genre, which is one of my favorite movies. But Goodfellas is good. Okay, so Ray Liotta is the main guy, Henry, I want to say, Hank or Henry, and he's like a young kid, you know, he gets into the mafia at a pretty young age, and it's like De Niro, who's the other, Paul Sorvino, I want to say, is one of the other mafia dudes, and so anyways, it's all about his like journey into the mafia, and Karen, I want to say, was the woman, and she turns on him, and he cheats on her, and then at the end, he sells them all out to the Witness Protection Program.
Man, she seemed very – so I know Mina better than you guys. So, I mean, she seemed very confident there. Stanzik, let's start with you. Has she seen Goodfellas?
Mina's hard to read because she didn't give the meaningful details of Goodfellas, right. But I think she's trying to trick us. So I'm going to say she has seen us and she's being deceptive.
Okay. That's why she's so good at this, by the way. Good at lying. Mark, I don't know about you. I think she has seen – there's too many details there, good details. I think she has seen Goodfellas. How about you?
I think she has too, but – She is throwing me off a little bit, but I do think she's seen it.
I'm very torn here. All right, Mina, have you seen Goodfellas?
Tricked you all. I've never seen Goodfellas.
Oh, my gosh.
I do love Godfather Part 2.
So you've actually seen that. Okay. All right, Mina, we appreciate it. Get out of here. Thank you. Promote your podcast real quick.
Oh, yeah. Check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. We've got the shipping container on this week. It should be a fun one.
Excellent. Check it out as part of Levitard and Friends Podcast Network. Mina, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Hi, guys.
Stu, I have a question.
Yes.
What world does Mina live in where she hasn't seen Caddyshack or Goodfellas?
A world that I don't want to live in. Let me ask you this. Because you love music and you love movies and Lord knows you love baseball and you were great at baseball. But if you could do it all over again, and I give Mark DeShera the option, you're going to be great at what it is you do. You're going to make a lot of money. You're going to do it for a long time. If you could do it all over again, baseball player, rock star, or an actor? What would you choose?
Oh, rock star, 100%.
Really?
100%. I've seen, you know what, I have a lot of respect for these actors. They work their tail off, but they're kind of like faking it, right? I mean, they're not, it's not real. I mean, imagine being up on a stage with a guitar, 100,000 fans just screaming, and you're just ripping those chords. Oh my gosh. That would be a rush every single night.
All the rock stars want to be athletes. All the athletes want to be rock stars, right?
It's crazy, man.
All right, Mark, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much, man.
All right, Stu.
Stupidity! All right, that was a lot of fun today. Thanks to Mark DeShera. Thank you to Abby as well, my lovely wife. Happy Valentine's Day to all the wives and the living girlfriends out there. Stantic, a living girlfriend. What the hell is going on with you?
Whatever.
But a happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. This was a lot of fun, and a big thank you to Kenny G. I mean, that was really, really special. My wife loves Kenny G. I love Kenny G. Who doesn't love Kenny G? But anyway, here's what I want you to do, okay? This is your – listen, I am giving this to you every single week out of the kindness of my heart. Abby is not getting paid a dime. I'm not getting paid a dime. Stanzik, are you getting paid to do this?
Barely.
All right, so barely. Barely Stanzik, zero me, zero Abby. This is – and so we're doing this for you. We are doing this for the Stugatz Army, the people who love the Levitard Show. We are doing this for you out of the kindness of our hearts, okay? I'm not getting paid. Abby not getting paid. Stantic barely getting paid. This is my Valentine's gift to you, this podcast, okay? Stupidity. It is my Valentine's gift for you. And what I want you guys to do for me on Valentine's Day is simple. I want you to download this thing. I want you to rate it. I want you to subscribe. I want you to review. And then I want you to unsubscribe. And I want you to resubscribe. And then I want you to rate it again. And then I want you to review it again. And then I want you to unsubscribe and subscribe, unsubscribe, subscribe. Good? Got it? Good. All right. I know the name of the podcast is Stupidity. If you will allow me, though, for just a minute here, to be serious about something that means a lot to me, to my community, to my family. Today marks the one-year anniversary of the tragic shootings at Stoneman Douglas High School. That is a high school that is within walking distance of my house, not very far from where I'm sitting right now. And like many, I've spent a lot of time recently reflecting on that day and what's happened in the year that has passed since that day. And I find it kind of interesting that, you know, I can't remember a single thing that happened the day before. I'm not certain I can remember much of what happened the day after, but I can remember every single detail of what happened the day of. Seeing all the military vehicles and the cop cars and the ambulances and the fire trucks passing me as I had to pull over on the Sawgrass Expressway, and me still having no idea what was going on, even while all those cars, all those vehicles were clearly racing to an emergency right near my house, still had no idea, and got back on the expressway and carried on the conversation I was having with my friend and went to my normal Starbucks. And then the phone started to ring. They just started to buzz. I'm standing in that Starbucks a couple of football fields away from all the terror happening at Stoneman Douglas High School. And I'm standing there. I'm standing in line. And my kids don't go to Stoneman Douglas, but we live, again, within walking distance of that school. I start getting texts nonstop, people unknowingly who do not know that my kids don't attend that school, but know I live in Parkland, know I live close to that school, asking me if my daughters are okay. And thankfully, they were, because they didn't go to that school. So imagine a packed Starbucks line out the door, and then all of a sudden, in an instant, it clears out because everyone gets that phone call, everyone gets that text, and then I get it from my wife, and she is, and I can hear the terror in her voice, the fear in her voice, the sadness in her voice. And so, listen, it's going to be, it's Valentine's Day, and I want everyone out there to enjoy it, but just know it's going to be a difficult day here in Parkland, but every day for the last year has been a difficult day since that day. Just more people paying attention today. But we've been going through this for an entire year. While you're out there today going about your normal day, just remember here in Parkland, it is anything but normal, and it hasn't been normal for a while, and I'm not certain it will ever be normal again. So on a day where, you know, you express your gratitude to your loved ones, just do me a favor. Keep all the kids, all the people, all the parents, everyone, just keep us in your hearts today. And I will just say this. I am proud of my city. I am proud of my hometown. I thought things would go back to normal, go back to people acting the way they did before that day. That has not been the case. There has been a noticeable change. It is a change for the better, where people are more tolerant of each other, people are more patient with each other, and at least 1 year in, that has continued, where everyone in this city has just decided, hey, you know what, certain things just aren't important, and we're going to be nicer and more patient and kinder to everyone. And my thoughts, my prayers with all the families that were affected by this, and please, I ask that you keep them in your hearts today as you celebrate Valentine's Day. It's going to be a tough day in Parkland. Appreciate it.